Ann Landers once said, "Some people believe holding on and hanging in there are signs of great strength. However, there are times when it takes much more strength to know when to let go and then do it." So let's gather some strength, shall we? Hey, everybody. Welcome to this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted with the mosted by me, Amelia Dalton. Folks, it's that time of year again, when the snow blankets the ground, ice coats just about everything, and we learn to let it go. So in honor of what seems to be the longest winter in years, let's talk about letting go in our electronic design lives. Today, Tanya Scroggie from GDCA joins me to discuss obsolescence management, long-term product sustainment practices, and why nobody wants to be a bad employee. But before we bring in Tanya, it's time for a little news you may have missed. How many of you have a box or maybe a bag full of old consumer electronics that still have not made their way to an e-waste recycler? I do. In that box somewhere in my basement is a flip phone, a Treo or two, do you remember those? And at least four broken, old, or obsolete Apple products. But what if at least some part of those electronics could be biodegradable? Well, in the future, maybe they can be. So recently, a group of scientists at Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, or KIT, were able to create the first biodegradable display, which is largely based on natural materials, and has been certified as biodegradable by an outside independent firm. So, at the heart of this new display is what is called the electrochromic effect. When voltage is applied to this kind of organic material, the light absorption of the material is altered and thus makes it change color. So this display is actually made up of a couple different layers, an electrochromic layer, a layer of gelatin-based electrolyte, and a layer of gold electrodes within a cellulose deacetate substrate. So, this new electrochromic display technology is also unique in that it uses inkjet printing to fabricate the layers. This is important because this kind of fabrication can lend itself to different device designs with individually addressable pixels. Also, with that gelatin layer, this team contends that this kind of display could also be worn on the skin without a loss of performance. Manuel Piche, first author of the publication and researcher at KIT's Light Technology Institute, says this about the impact of this study. He says, "For the first time, we have demonstrated that it is possible to produce sustainable displays that are largely based on natural materials with the help of industrially relevant production methods. After use, these displays are no longer electronic scrap, but can be composted. In combination with recycling and reuse, this might help minimize or completely prevent some of the environmental impacts of electronic scrap." Wow. So, if you want even more information about this super cool study, including further information about the architecture of the components, all of the chemistry involved, and even more information about how inkjet printing comes into play, I've included a link below the player to the associated white paper called "Biodegradable Inkjet Printed Electrochromic Display for Sustainable Short Life Cycle Electronics." All right, it's time to bring in Tanya from GDCA, who tells us a tale of OEM woe. There once was a client who wouldn't let go of a design or two that should have gone out to pasture. All right, let's go. Hi, Tanya. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Okay, so we're talking about obsolescence management processes today, but before we dig into the details, can you set the stage for us, Tanya?
Yes, It all began with a new CEO taking over the leadership of a major OEM. The CEO came in with the vision of revolutionizing the company by clearing out the older designs that were dragging down the company's profitability, which usually happens when older designs are plagued by decreasing demand and a supply chain that becomes increasingly problematic. We engaged the CEO, we developed business cases, and his manufacturing operations team identified the difficult products that could be transferred to GDCA for post-EOL support. This is what we do. We advise him in developing internal processes for this transfer. Everything was going well until sales came into the picture. Sales was completely worried about giving away sales opportunities and client visibility, and the transfer came to a standstill. This is when the idea of writing the article was born. It felt to me that it was extremely important to voice the CEO's concerns and bring into focus a better picture of the issues that product end of life, regardless of its inevitability, brings into the corporation.
Cool. So, Tanya, what kind of challenges do you see in terms of low-performing older designs?
Amelia, the speed at which embedded technology developed brought a variety of sustainment issues to OEM. As often, OEMs are able to design products much faster than clients want who are able to upgrade. This leaves OEMs with painfully frustrating challenges and options. They either disappoint customers by end-of-lifing their product when they still require it, or they continue to support those products beyond what is feasible or profitable for the company. These low-volume products create a backlog to any strategic and work plans, as the time for new product introduction is sacrificed in order to source for obsolete components and develop ad hoc solutions required to manufacture this old design. Not only that, you won't believe it, but I have clients with millions of dollars invested in pre-stock obsolete inventory that needs to be warehoused and upkept, and in many instances, legislation for certain industries require these components to be recertified every so often. So these are not only huge expenses for OEMs, but also create lots of headache as well.
So I would absolutely imagine that. Now, Tanya, why would a client want to keep using a discontinued product? I mean, why continue?
Amelia, that is a great question. Let me tell you that obsolescence is not an issue unless there is post-EOL product demand. And it is not that the customer doesn't want to upgrade. It's that many times they can't due to a regulatory testing, design requirement, or certification. The computer boards we support are embedded in much larger systems, like a helicopter, a submarine, or a medical device. Upgrading the computer will mean upgrading and recertifying the complete system. This translates to years and hundreds of thousands of dollars in investment. And so customers who cannot upgrade go around and around in circles trying to find feasible solutions that can hold them up until the next obsolescence event causes the cycle to begin all over again. And if the customer doesn't get the support they need or that they expect from the OEM, then they begin to harvest negative feelings for the OEM.
Okay, so Tanya, how do you see individual departments playing a role in long-term product sustainment practices?
The issues with obsolescence are the same issues with death and dying. Nobody wants to talk about those inevitable events because they can't be controlled and they bring sorrow to the company and client. Once a product becomes discontinued, it drops out of everybody's radar with no accountability, only to resurface sometime years later when customers call in a sourcing panic. And it is at this moment that the various departments come into play. Every department at a company is focusing on excelling at their task at hand. Nobody wants to be a bad employee. sales, bringing in all the POs they possibly can. They don't want to leave a penny behind, and they shouldn't, but they don't have the visibility to know that to earn that penny, the company had to spend $10 to do so. And of course, manufacturing delivers and doesn't want to let sales down. So they pull onto the manufacturing floor all the engineering resources needed to cross parts, rearrange a test fixture, troubleshoot parts, all to fulfill an order that is no longer profitable. Do you think that makes sense?
Absolutely. So, Tanya, what do you see as a solution to these issues?
Amelia, innovation is not enough. Companies need to prepare for product obsolescence at a corporate level. This vision must begin at the CEO level and trickle down into every department. It takes an engaged and committed CEO to set policies and direct departments to develop supportive processes for successful product discontinuation and disposition, because it is not enough to simply end of life a product. It is all about customer demand. Remember, no demand, no issue. But even when customer demand significantly falls off, there are still a few customers that need availability. And these are the customers clogging up your system and undercutting business goals. Departments must work intentionally as a team to develop standard processes that will protect customer relationships while supporting business objectives. These processes reinforce an obsolescent strategy and policy that is tailored to fit the company's business objectives and keep the active product, which are the products that generate most of the revenue, to keep flowing throughout the organization unobstructed. Recently, we hosted a sustainment symposium, where we invited the defense community to participate. They were all talking about shifting their work from being focused on obsolescent management to life cycle sustainment solutions. I think there is a similar shift that OEMs should consider making from focusing on EOL management, minimum order quantities, last time buy notices, to life cycle optimization. This way, they can get the very most profitability out of their product. An analogy for this is gardening. When you go to your garden and you prune a dead branch, you already know what you're going to do with the dead branch. So simply put, if an OEM had robust policies and processes around product lifecycle stages that included not just the definition of the lifecycle stage, but the disposition of each stage with the policy and procedures to support it, they will gain a new level of control over their profitability.
So, Tanya, you recently interviewed Holger Wussmann, Chief Executive Officer for Kontron Electronics, about this topic. What was his take on this? I would imagine he has a very unique position to talk about these kinds of issues.
Oh, yes, Amelia, definitely. Holger is a vault of knowledge and experience. He talked about the art of discontinuation politics. He said discontinuation is definitely not easy, especially if there is no preparation and no processes in place. He said, emotionally, the product is the OEM and the customer's baby, and they have to let it go. Financially, the product ends, there are no more sale provisions. Economically, there is no full amortization yet. So no wonder the CEOs struggle with this task. And so I invite you all to read the interview.
I will definitely check it out. So, Tanya, for my audience who may not know what GDCA is all about, tell me a bit about your company and your particular role there.
Amelia, GDCA is the first legacy equipment manufacturer. We have been manufacturing post-EOL products for 30 years now. We work with OEMs to extend the life of obsolete embedded computer boards. I work directly with the OEM to define obsolescence strategies and work with them to support their products and customers that need post-EOL product availability. I will say, since I began working with GDCA, I have been struck by how much OEMs care about their customers. We are constantly assuring customers that if the OEM could fulfill the needs, they would. But the OEM is as hamstrung as the customer is. And this is one of the most satisfying aspects of my job, being able to help heal the relationship between the OEM and the customer by truly being an ally to the OEM in the customer satisfaction.
All right, Tanya. Well, I think it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, you told me earlier that you have a passion for art and philosophy. Tell me a little bit more about that.
That's right. I say it's a secret love affair because all my spare time goes into poetry and learning about Rumi and collecting art and what are the latest trends in art. So it's my life.
I love it. Awesome. Well, Tanya, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amelia.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of fun, techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fry and page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fry and page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, I promise I will respond. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of February 19th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.